everybody, and welcome to the Stargirl Squadcast. I'm Cameron.
I'm Adiba.
And I'm Tam.
Today, we are going to be talking about Frenemies, Chapter 3, Episode 4, The Evidence. This episode, it wasn't as exciting as last week, for sure. Not that every episode needs to be exciting. But it was. I felt like it was kind of not a step back, because it wasn't a bad episode by any means, but it wasn't necessarily the way that I would 100% have wanted the storylines from episode 3 to continue, if that makes sense.
In what way? What do you mean?
Like, I don't know. It just, I felt like there was a lot of storylines in that episode that, I don't know. I felt like episode 3 was a very big starting point. Like, that's where you get into a lot of the storylines. And a lot of major revelations happened, but it felt like it was very slow. It felt like we were kind of treading water for the most part, with the exception of, like, two or three plot points that were major plot points.
Maybe the order, like, the sequence between first opening it with Cameron, then going to the hospital, and then, you know, like, after that, dealing with the, it's a little bit jumbled. I feel like it should have started maybe with the hospital scene with Sylvester, because just kind of get that out of the way, and then we go, uh-oh, something's going on with Cameron.
Right.
Also, because I think it was weird for us to realize that it was the same day. Like, by the time that we get to the scene with Beth and Dr. McKnighter, she's in the same clothes, and we were like, oh, because it's like,
right. But I don't think almost like Cameron we're expecting, was?
No.
I think so he, like, was in a different shirt.
Yeah, it's a little weird. And I mean, you know, rich behavior. He probably has an abundance of similar clothing.
All the same.
You know, all in black.
He does. And but, they're all like $20,000 a piece.
Yeah. But Beth is in the same outfit, and she's alone in the pit stop with Dr. McKnighter. And by the time we got to that scene, I was like, oh, so this is the same night as episode 3, which is a little bit surprising, just because I mean
it makes sense, because Sylvester was like dead outside of the trailer, but yeah, I get your point.
No, I know, but it's just it went so far in. But yeah,
so the episode does start with Cameron, which is, it was almost kind of shocking. It was like, what is happening? The Camney music is in full force.
The music.
I love, Camney though, music. That it's like Christmas. Yes, it's, Adio wasn't here for any of these times that we've talked about Camney, I don't think. But they do have music, or like they do.
It's like they very have, twinkly.
It's like two bars previously that we've heard.
I didn't know Camney had music. That's kind of cute.
They do.
It's very
but you get
cute.
you get like a full Christmas version, which I like that they're like Christmas.
Is that the song that was playing in the snow scene?
They played it again. It was a different version of it. It was more orchestral.
We get to see the huge collection of snow globes.
Yes. Okay.
I have a theory about that. Do you have a theory about that?
I think we shared the theory with each other.
Yes.
Where it's like sort of a situation where Jordan was collecting the snow globes and giving them to Cameron, or like to the family in general, because that's not Cameron's room.
No,
that's like some kind of family,
like some
loft area
situation. So as we always know, I have to mention at least once per episode that Jordan didn't actually raise Cameron.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Every single episode.
Every single episode. Yeah. Well, here's my daily episode reminder of the fact that, according to my theory with the snow globes, I'm thinking, okay, well, he goes on business trips, and every time he comes back, because he's Icicle, you know, he always has to be on theme, and he'll bring back little baby Cameron a snow globe that he got when he was away on travel, like wherever he went internationally. And so that's why there is just like shelves and shelves and shelves of snow globes that, you know, don't really look like, they don't really, I don't really get the vibe that they're Cameron's either. Like, they're definitely, like, just there. But, there is a Courtney snow globe.
I think Cameron had that one made.
I don't know.
No, I think
he
Jordan,
either made it, or, yeah, Jordan gifted it to him.
Yeah, even Jordan.
I don't think that he's,
that's so,
I don't
creepy.
Think he's,
that's 10
but
times
I don't think
creepier.
He's, I know, but I don't think that Cameron
it's a villain
is that
family.
Creepy.
No,
they
I think
they are a villain family.
I don't know, for the dude that was like randomly drawing her.
Remember, Jordan was the one that said love over everything. I killed my wife's competition person dude for me. So
competitors?
Whatever, it's late. And
enemy?
I was going to say, okay, Jordan literally murdered the man that also had Christine's attention. Affections. So, I'm not putting it past this man to give his son a snow globe of the girl that he likes. That's all.
That's so weird and creepy.
He's a nice man.
He's unhinged.
He's the leader of a injustice society of America that tries to kill people to enforce people to enjoy the
try
fact
to
that
kill
they
people. They did.
No, they
kill
did
people.
Kill people.
They did.
But
kill
they,
people.
I meant specifically about Project New America. They tried to brainwash people to be programmed to believe that basically global warming exists and to not be racist and all this different kind of stuff, but simultaneously also kill children mercilessly along the way. So that's why I think we're pretty clear in the fact that there is a lot of wonkiness going on in general.
Cameron picks up the snow globe, looks at it, is definitely thinking of Courtney in that moment.
It's
and then
he's
like freezes it.
But
because it's a Academy music.
But can I... I'm going to talk about it again. Don't mark my words. But can we talk about how dirty they are doing Cameron in
it's
these...
Not
it's,
good.
Okay. Preference speaking, I don't like the eyes. I don't like that they're white now. I like it that when they were blue, they were. I liked it better. Or like when Icicles was blue, because technically nobody else's was ever blue. But I liked it better in that capacity. And then like also, like the actual freezing thing. First of all, the implication that Cameron is a mouth breather, because he was just breathing. Like he wasn't like consciously like I am going to release my frost breath. Like it happened by accident. But, like, that would only happen by accident if he was going, like...
It's the way he's just moodily staring at the snow globes. I'm not over that either.
and then when he drops it, it, like, whatever they did, they literally put refrigerator ice cubes in that snow globe.
Glass.
It,
yeah.
Like, the glass was literally refrigerator ice cubes. And it's like, okay...
I'm not a fan of just the way that was done, just because it was kind of startling, and I know that was the point, but it wasn't, I would say, aesthetically pleasing.
No, it was very much not aesthetically pleasing.
I would have preferred it if it was his hand. He was holding the hourglass. What
yes,
because
the way
snow
that it...
globe. And then his hand emitted frost.
Well, that's not even. That's also how it happened, because it's the breath. But then the breath isn't like when it cuts and changes to the shot over his shoulder. The breath isn't what freezes it. It just freezes by itself, presumably from the contact.
But I'm saying,
so it's like why did
they
even
showed it
that
way? I know it doesn't really make sense. Anyways, we have the grandparents come in.
Oh yeah,
super creepy grandparents. Yes.
Yeah, they mentioned Niflheim once again, so spread that frost giant agenda. But I don't really have much to say on them other than they're kind of so absurdly ridiculously bad grandparents and evil, like so clearly that it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, it's hilarious. Like
they're actually very funny. Courtney is dead asleep and
on top of
comes.
Her bed with her shoes on with still a sweater on when she could have just been sleeping inside her covers. Boots. They're not even, she's full on slippers. It's not even like this girl needs to learn to actually use her bed properly. I know why they did it. It's because obviously she's gonna fly out the window. She needs to be worried. Because imagine she did that barefoot. Like,
no, I think that'd be infinitely funnier.
I feel like that would be funnier. Yeah.
It would be funnier. But that's why they imagined it. But I'm like, no, you gotta make it realistic. Like, I love the faces that she made though when the pillow broke and she was just like, what is going on?
Again, I don't respect people that put shoes on their bed.
Oh, me neither.
Yeah.
No, you shouldn't put your shoes on your bed.
I'm sorry.
Obviously.
Courtney, you need to rethink things. You need to reanalyze your life a little bit there.
Refocus. So, afterwards, we get mm-hmm. Courtney. She's found Sylvester. She eventually brings him to the hospital or whatever, where Bridget looks over him. Bridget is talking and is like, yeah, I reported this as correlating to like a hit and run. Yep. And so.
Did I do good?
Yes, she did. she needed that, what's the word? Whatever. That
validation.
Yes. And Pat is like not very nice about it. Courtney's nice about it. But Pat's trying to be nice about it. Pat's like,
he's just stressed, man. He's just like, oh, he's going through personal work. He's like, I'm going to have to crash another. He's thinking, I'm going to have to crash another car. He's like, I'm going to have to crash something like that. But
she says that it's a puncture wound. So important to note that obviously whoever picked him up had like incredible strength. But like,
So we also say that she goes and she calls Beth afterwards when she's done, which is also nice because all of season two, it was just kind of ignoring Beth when she needed them, and now it's a little bit, you see, you do start to see the involvement of the chapels being more grounded a little bit, even though they're not necessarily realistic in the way that they're kind of, I feel like they're almost in the Courtney season one delusional era of what being a superhero is alike, which is fair game, because is that not literally what Courtney was like? Like, when you first get introduced with this fun idea of, ooh, superheroes. Oh, so cool. Laser lemon. Stuff like that, right?
We cut over to Yolanda, who is speaking to Rick in her bedroom. They're talking about, oh, Sylvester, whatever. He's in the hospital, Courtney said. And Yolanda's mother comes in and is super nasty. As per
as usual. But before we talk about the nastiness of Mrs. Montez, can we just appreciate the fact that Rick and Yolanda do speak on the phone?
Right.
They do.
I love their friendship.
That's so important.
Supportive besties.
It's just really nice to see. Also, we know this is build up for Infinity Inc. when they're going to be a trio. No Courtney.
Yes.
But I think what we're noticing is that there's still issues from, at least on Yolanda's side, I think, with her trust with Courtney after last season, because it kind of goes again, and I'm still surprised, like, I'm not surprised, but I wish we saw this vote, because I think that, like, Rick and Yolanda are a lot more on the same page then we're actually being given the time to look and see, because they're talking a lot, and now we see that they're making plans together, and they're gonna go off and do their own thing, and Beth is probably gonna be following them going, I agree with you, but I don't agree with this way of you doing it, you know, when she gets there, but she's not exactly there yet.
We get the reveal that Yolanda's father has apparently lost his job. He's not in this episode. I don't know if he's in the season. I knew that her mother was going to be in the season, so I wonder if they're going to establish on more Montez family lore.
I think he shows up later, just for funsies.
I wish that I mean, Alex did. I know that shouldn't expect, I love Alex. But
we also hear that the house is going to get sold.
Right, which is a big deal.
She also accuses Yolanda of telling everyone everything.
Yes.
Which is so rude.
She's obsessed with her reputation, though. It's in character in the sense that this mother literally cares more about the perception of what her family is. Actual state of her family. Because I'm sorry, but she's delusional to be this upset about a crumbling family when their family has been crumbled already for the last 2 years. It's not working. And even the people who maybe she feels the most shame to admit this to, which is, I'm guessing, you know, the church community, they are also telling this woman, you need to calm down and you need to you know, actually help out what's going on by being a supportive mother to your daughter. So at this point, it's like, it's clearly some pride issue. But it's like, it's rough. But what I do like from that scene is that we get to see Yolanda and her mom actually speaking in Spanish. That's fun. Always having that bilingual. Mm-hmm. Well, because my family isn't like totally bilingual, but it was realistically bilingual in the terms of just switching into the stuff that's almost like You know, it's almost like she's so ashamed of that that she switched to Spanish to even tell Yolanda that, almost as if, like, no one else can hear what's going on, which is, like, that's the code-switching kind of situation I kind of got from that scene, which is, like, especially odd, just in terms of, like, where the mom's state is, like, in her mind when it comes to, like, this. It's a big thing for her. But also, it just now puts Yolanda in kind of the similar situation as Rick, in the case that, like, they're both having their literal houses, like, fall apart. And they're being told to, like, well, Rick's not being told to, but Rick is deliberately keeping this a secret, except for, like, when he finally told Beth. And then Yolanda's being told to keep this a secret, and she's also kind of agreeing that, like, oh, yeah, well, why would I tell anybody this kind of thing? So,
right.
Yeah.
We then cut back over to Courtney in the hospital with Sylvester. Sylvester wakes up and is like, yeah, somebody got the jump on me. I've been ambushed. It was the first time in my career that this has ever happened. And Courtney and him come to the conclusion that they have to change up the rules with the cosmic staff, which is only going to cause problems because, of course, it is. Courtney really likes giving herself problems for later, Courtney. She's a huge fan of that. You know that there's going to be a moment in, like, probably maybe not in the next couple episodes, but definitely before the finale, where she's like, I need that staff, and Sylvester's also going to be like, I need that staff, and the staff is gonna fling, 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 go back and forth or whatever, and it's gonna be a huge deal. But especially if the staff, if Sylvester takes the staff out on a mission somewhere, and Courtney also needs to go on a mission, then it's like a whole thing.
So that would be fun, though, to see the actually, like, the staff zoom back and forth across town. I would think it's kind of fun to see
No, it would be a super fun visual, for sure.
That'd be such a cute scene.
For us, but we're not Courtney Whitmore, nor the inhabitants of Blue Valley who are getting blown up by whoever. So Pat brings Dr. McNider in treat Sylvester. Oh, I love Dr. McNider so much. Unproblematic fave. Definition of. And there's some pleasantries that are exchanged before we zoom out, and we see that Dr. Bones has been viewing everything from afar, presumably him. They technically haven't given us the reveal, but, like, we know
definitely
that's definitely going to be him. It's weird that he's set up all the hospital rooms, like, to that extent. But sure, whatever, I'll buy it. Unless perhaps he has somebody on the inside, too, that's, like, set up that camera specifically. That would be an interesting take.
Doctors.
Well, Nurse Love is somewhere. But anyway, cut to commercial, come back, Sylvester scene again with Dr. McNider. Dr. McNider is checking him out, and we see that the cosmic energy of the staff now exists, like, within him or something. Like, he's not generating it, but, like, he's gotten it in his system enough.
But how does that work 10 full years afterwards is the thing that, like, it just,
I think what they meant was when he died he still had the power of the cosmic staff in him, and so it was maintaining him, so he didn't, like, rot and decompose, like, he stayed.
But he's
Sylvester
still, so,
and then it eventually kick-started again when Courtney got the staff.
Oh, when Courtney got the...
healed him. I think that's the angle that they're trying to go for.
That was not clear. They could have said that a little bit clearer.
They could have. But I don't think they know exactly either what happened. So I think they said it that way because they're like, they wouldn't know.
And can we just... okay, can we admire that it's just very cool to see Dr. McNider actually doing doctor things. Yes.
Yes, which it's fun. Beth, next, please.
It's not something that Bridget can do. It's, like, specifically with the knowledge of
like being a superhero doctor. Yeah.
Weirdness, whatever.
Bring that mighty medness.
Yes. And I hope that is a sign that we're going to be seeing Beth really taking in, especially because in this episode, like, we have him saying, well, no, I really trust, you know, Beth Chappell. She's doing a great job. Like, I love that girl. Let's give it up for Beth Chappell. And we saw what he was able to do. So knowing already that we have several characters who clearly are on the path to already have some weird health situations, and I'm looking at Sylvester, I'm looking at Cindy being a lizard, I'm thinking at potentially Rick with his whole unpredictability with his hourglass, all of that stuff, gives a lot of situations for Beth to step up and become team doctor literally in the middle of a fight, should it come to it. Not even just having, oh, let's bring him to the hospital. Like, no, like, she might actually need to do something, like, literally in the moment. That's what I really want to see for Beth, and I have high hopes for that. I don't know if it's necessarily coming in the same capacity as Dr. McKnighter yet, obviously, because she doesn't have the experience, so I'm not expecting her to be, like, actually a doctor when she's in high school yet. But they teased us, so you have to deliver now.
You mentioned it a little bit, but we have this discussion between Dr. McKnighter and Sylvester about passing their mantles, where Sylvester really is not... He doesn't really view himself as having passed his mantle in the first place, but...
Because he's a loser.
Which is bizarre, because he was dead. But, like, he's very much like, yeah, I'm not super happy with how my life is going right now.
Obviously.
I feel like I keep screwing up, whatever. And, yeah, it's just interesting to see the contrast between them. I'm still not a huge Sylvester fan, but I do think that is noteworthy. But honestly, I feel like there's no way that you can actually, you're supposed to be a Sylvester fan. Like, I don't think that that's actually true.
No, it's written
true.
That. No, he's very much
like, which is weird why he's still getting so much screen time, because he's somebody that you hate. I think they wanted it to be a you love how much you hate him situation, and that's just not...
That doesn't even work,
that's
though.
Just not... I mean, I'm sure that some people like him in that capacity, but, like, I don't know.
I mean, sometimes I do. Like, when I made that stupid Seven Things edit, I was having a great time. Like, I was laughing and smiling because it was so ridiculous, because Sylvester as a character is absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
But he's just eating it. Like, listen, I guess if he did have his own spin-off situation or whatever, I actually would enjoy it if he, in the sense that it's like, not overkill, and there were other characters as well that I wasn't waiting for, and they were not actually getting what I was expecting and all that, because that's really what's clouding the situation. But he's still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
He's almost like the Crocs in the level of absolute ridiculousness.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's what I feel. And except he has a little bit more depth and the chance of, like, not always being, like, at 100% all the time. But, like, a good 80% of the time, he's having some sort of absolute meltdown of some kind.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the Crocs in the sense of, like, they're always escalating situations. And it's fine because, like, yeah, there's season regulars now, but it's, like, measured doses of ridiculousness. Mm-hmm. But this is, like, a good chunk of the episode for 4 episodes in a row now. That's when we're getting, like, a little bit sick of it.
Everybody and their mother is down at the crime scene again.
Obviously.
This time looking to recover stuff from Sylvester's attack specifically. Mm-hmm. There's, like, no evidence that they can find. And Cindy is basically saying, like, of course there's no evidence because, like, whoever did this is not stupid and you would clean this up, which is probably true.
Yeah.
I don't fully understand why Courtney didn't immediately call the gang to investigate immediately after. I feel like if they investigated immediately, they would have found some evidence. Like, make sure that Sylvester is in the hospital or whatever, but there's three
other
people.
But remember that immediately after they found out about the gambler's death, they had their meeting in the pit stop with Sylvester there.
Mm.
So if we're going to consider Sylvester somewhat suspicious to what's going on, then if he knew from the very beginning and he was with Pat, then it makes sense that he would, like, draw them away from the crime scene so that he would have the chance to do whatever it took to scrub it or whatever.
Can we talk about the fact that nobody in the Cornhusker whole RV park.
Yes. I thought that was going to play a serious part.
I thought it's a very public place where this man was thrown into the air and smashed down. And there's
people still living there. And then the JSA just decided to invest. So what time did they do this? At 4 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
Well, people can still...
You would have woken up. Somebody would have woken up. And the staff went, whir, 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 whir,
in the middle of the night. Like, there's all these like warbling sounds. They would have heard that too.
Then they had to call an ambulance. So there's an ambulance that's... Like, there was I don't believe for 1 second that nobody woke up, but nobody woke up apparently. But anyway, back to the crime scene. Beth's goggles find one skin cell,
a singular cell.
We're gonna go into science mode very briefly. Shush. I'm a biologist. I'm not gonna sound very smart on this podcast because I don't really particularly care about using my education to its utmost degree on this podcast. However, a skin cell, singular, is very, 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 very small. And they emphasize that it's one skin cell. I'm sorry, there is no way in hell that those goggles found one skin cell. They're not a microscope.
They could be. Like,
they're not.
They could be.
They're not.
They have a microscope mode.
No, there's no way. There's no way. They might have a microscope mode or whatever, but it's just, it's way too much. But whatever. Okay, science mode for right now. Over, have we considered but we'll that return when we talk about the analysis. Is
that good?
She was caught unawares, so it was the goggles that found that particular sample. She like looked in the direction and it was like,
mm-hmm. She seemed pretty upset that she actually almost missed it too, and I think that's kind of interesting. That we have that. Also, before Beth actually did find the evidence, I found the conversation a little bit weird. Not that weird, but when she said, well, I think it's a dead end, and then Rick was just like, again, or whatever. Like, in sense of, like, I get being annoyed, maybe frustrated, but I guess I was a little surprised. I guess... I don't know who that was directed to. I don't know if it was directed at Beth or if it was just directed... He was just frustrated. Or if it was at Courtney, because he's like, I can't believe Courtney dragged us all the way over here in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning so that no one can watch us or whatever. And we got nothing. I don't know which one it is. But the way that he said, again, when we've literally almost never even saw them suit up this season, is a little... I feel the dialogue was a little bit out of in the first blue. Episode.
Well, I think we're not even acknowledging how fast everything has happened. Mm-hmm. Episode one is 2 days. Episode two is that night plus the next day.
Yeah.
Episode three is, I think it's 2 days and they're entirely new, right? And then this one is that the second day of episode three plus a new day.
Okay.
So that's like four or five days.
One, episodes like 10 to like 13 were all within the same 48 hours. So.
Right. But that was that. I would argue that that's different because they knew all about the ISA and how prevalent of a threat that was. So we cut back over to Cameron. Before we actually cut over to him, we get a shot of his mansion, and there's, like, thunder in the distance, which
raining, and I was like, oh.
It was raining, and there's, like, a boom of thunder and lightning. Like, it's funny. But, so, we need to talk about his room, because there's a lot.
Oh, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on in his room. He has a surfboard. He has a skateboard. He has a piano. Mm-hmm.
He's just done every hobby in the world.
Wait, look, the pictures of his mother. I never noticed this.
Oh, there's a picture of his mom?
Look at these pictures. I did see those.
Not the stock photo of Jordan.
Yes!
That's so funny.
It's actually a stock photo.
And he's like, my dad's a superhero. It's the picture of, it's literally the picture that they use for like Jordan as Icicle. Yeah, that's funny.
They couldn't have asked Neil Jackson
to like do like a selfie. Like a quick little selfie and send it in.
Yeah, no, I never realized that there were so many wedding photos.
Yeah, so it's his mom is really much, like, in there.
Are there like random like waves? I'm going to put what are those? There's a significant yeah, it's like amount a beach. Of waves.
It's like a beach thing. I'm going to like put exposure on it yeah. or whatever, so I can actually I think, look
okay,
at
you,
it.
You work on that. Yeah. What I wanted to draw attention to as my favorite little detail that I only noticed on this rewatch, mm-hmm. he has a self-portrait, but it's like abstract. And so it has like color, like weird coloring going mm-hmm. on, but half of his face is blue. And
where
I
is
like
that? What?
It's next to his door. Interesting. It's next to his door. There's like an abstract self portrait. It like it like it vaguely looks like him, but like
oh there
yeah
ooh
like it like ha- like it's very very purposely
okay.
half of his face is
I'm
blue.
Taking a thing okay actually
so that you
look
can
like
share
him
it.
That much to be honest he gave okay himself afro hair
what did he
yeah
nor
yes hold on could be abstract I guess but. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's
but
definitely abstract.
I know,
it's
but I'm
blue
saying
and yellow
what I'm saying.
And...
I'm talking about the afro hair.
So, his grandparents come in. They give him tea. He
what's a fun of time?
He says, it's hot. Which means that he still feels temperatures. Mm-hmm. They must have included that in the script, I guess, to show that like for whatever weird ice puberty is going on, it's like not done or whatever. Like because he's still like you know he's still sensitive to temperatures, so take that as you will. Also later on when they're doing the whole, when they're in the art room and it's frozen, you can see his breath, which implies that he's cold, or at least his body temperature is warmer than the rest of the room, which presumably wouldn't happen if you are an ice monster. So, you know, but okay, what was your point?
But it's the picture, it's the way that they did Icicle in the first episode of like the pilot. That's what it reminds me of.
Yes, Tam, I know. That's why I said that it was an abstract self-portrait.
But no, but I'm saying I don't think it's as... I think it looks more like Jordan than it does of Cameron.
That's fair. Maybe that'll be...
So I'm saying...
Kind of what
mean,
he looks like.
What later. If that's... What if that's... Okay, this is now extreme. This is now extreme theory.
Extreme. What if,
but
what if he
what if
vaguely
this is
remembers
what he remembered
that?
From when he was a like younger and he drew it. Because he felt like he was going crazy and he was like to his therapist and everything. No, my dad was like this in the ice garden and everything like that. And then they're like, he needs help.
That actually might yeah. be the case. I don't know. That makes sense to me.
Anyways, grandparents steal his art because they hate him and they want him to be evil. But I don't really have any other analysis on that other than that. But we cut back over to a Pat and Sylvester scene. The only thing that was worth noting to me, I thought, was that Pat is like, we restocked your fridge. Which is like, huh? That's a grown man. Why does he have his own fridge? Go buy your own food, Sylvester. Like
he can't. He has no job.
He doesn't. He doesn't have any it's job. True. He doesn't have any money.
It's
he
true.
Any
but he had enough
prospects.
Money to find wood to create that little crate and to fix the marble of the table, so
he's a trust fund baby. He can do whatever he wants. He's
but
rich.
Can he actually?
Well, probably. I mean, yeah,
is
I
he
know.
Actually? Then why is his food being restocked? I think what's happening here is Pat is reverting back to the Sylvester is 15 years old and I have to take care of him.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, for sure. Yes.
And yeah, because you don't restock a 20 or 30 something
yeah.
year old's fridge. You do that 40 to a 15
something, yeah.
You do that to 15 year olds.
But so we go over to Beth and Dr. McKnighter, who are besties.
Absolutely. I
love
this
dynamic
that.
Actually.
And I was so glad that we did get to see Beth in this outfit again.
Yeah.
Because I was like, that outfit is too good to only be in for a 2 minute scene. Yeah.
But so they focus in on the cell. They're studying it. And Dr. McKnighter is like, he's seen a result like this mm-hmm. before. So I don't think they actually 100% are saying
confirmed.
That it's yeah. not, obviously it's not confirmed that it's Dragon King's cell, but it's not a match. Beth's goggles later put up Dragon King's information or whatever, but it's not actually a match because I was going to say, slipping back into science mode again, even if it's heavily mutated, Cindy's cell would, like, initially would look more like her cell than Dragon King's cell. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it would not look like it has her DNA, even if it's mutated from her initial birth DNA or whatever, which I'm assuming that he put whatever genome markers, it just is like at a certain age, it's going to express these genes versus these other genes, like a metamorphosis type deal.
Can I please say the way that Charles says the line delivery for this, because it's probably my favorite part of the entire episode.
Go ahead.
It's like, it's one of Pat's enemies, and ours, and yours.
Yes, who? So dramatic.
And then he's like, it's Cindy's father. And then she goes, oh, and then she stands up, and then she goes, Dragon King. And then she frowns. And then it ends.
She's so cute. I love the entire scene.
I loved it so much. No, but I especially love the way she really does. She frowns at the end. She's like, I'm gonna get it.
I loved it.
And also, can we talk about it? Can we talk about the fact that we saw the stills for episode 6?
Yes.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
So knowing that this is probably very much the start of what I'm going to assume is Beth probably helping Cindy through her whole lizardy thing, because in the episode description for episode 7, which also came out, it says Beth found something on the laptop. But who has the laptop? Cindy has the laptop. Berman. So there's no way for Beth to have access to that laptop without Cindy having to either tell her specifically or to share with the group that she has had
that
it.
That kind of throws out the meme that we promised to explain on our social media platforms, which we will.
Yeah.
But
when is a good time to bring that meme up?
I guess we can do that now. We're going to stop talking about the actual episode for a second and talk about Tam and I's insights.
For context, every night or every second night for the last embarrassingly long amount of time, so I'm not going to even date ourselves, at around 12 or 1 a.m. in the morning, we would both go and come up with a new idea for what we think is going to be the altercation scene and what would have caused it.
I'm trademarking that. It is the altercation. I've been calling it the altercation for months. Get it in your head, people. That's what it's called. Whatever the hell the actual episode is called. No, it's not. It's the altercation episode, okay? ALTRICKATION. Altercation, okay? Anyway.
So we would always come up with more and more outrageous reasons for why they would be fighting and what would be involved in it. And then we came up with a meme when we thought we finally unlocked an insane level of reasoning for why Cameron and Rick would be literally brawling each other in Cameron's mansion.
Essentially, we thought that Cameron was going to somehow steal the laptop and Rick was going to find out about that, because we thought that there was going to be some kind of evidence about his family or whatever that was on there that implicated them for something, and that he would be like, I should perhaps take this, and then he would take it, and Rick would be like, I hate that boy, and then go kick his ass.
Like, you stole Beth Chappell's laptop?
That is Beth's property,
and you have committed theft, which now gives me the right to do breaking and entering, and vandalism.
Don't think that's going to happen anymore.
No, but it was fun while it lasted.
Really unfortunate, but it was. I do think that the JSA, well, depending on when it would happen, the JSA definitely would not be together after the events of the altercation. But I don't know when it's going to be. I don't think it's next episode.
I think it's episode 6.
Possibly episode 6, but we have so many stills that in my head the sequence of events are going to be that most of the episode takes place at like the Camney dinner intervention. It's so funny that maybe they're getting an intervention.
Maybe it's an intervention. Nine. What if something happens? Because what if something happens to Beth in episode 8? Rick only finds out in episode 9. He blames Cameron. He goes ballistic in episode 9.
Well, why would he jump to blaming Cameron? That's
because he hates him. Mm-hmm. But because I don't know.
I know, but Ice Hour is rational. Or it's not rational, but it's like based in... No, but it's based in pre-existing conditions. You know what I mean?
It's, so it's like, already implied with the discrimination that they have against each other. That's like the prejudice that they have already against each other has evidence. Like there's facts behind it that they are, you know, pinning on each other. So I guess not. But it's the fact that I truly have no idea what's happening in episode 8 is what's the biggest question mark for me right now at this moment. Because I feel like I can more or less... Yeah, I feel like I can more or less kind of piece together where I think the story is going. But on the Beth and Rick aspect, for Rick, just slightly starting to understand. For Beth, it's also starting to become a little bit more clear. But I'm holding on to that they're going to have crazy scenes line, that throwaway line from CamG, and I'm like doing all of this math meme lady stuff in my head trying to come up with when is that going to happen, like which episode and how.
I think
and
it's
why.
So funny. I think it's so funny the Cameron Yelman went on a podcast, the after show, said something, probably didn't even think about it, and how there's roughly like 300 people that are
clinging
like,
to it. Because we need something to keep us going. And, you know, it's a rough, it was a long break. And that was really the one thing that kept us going over that break. Not the one thing, but a substantial thing.
Courtney is walking in the hallway with the rest of the JSA, who are all like, Dragon King is back. That's mostly a Rick.
He's so shocked by everything. Like his face is in the scene is really funny. He's just totally like shocked, blinking guy. Like, excuse me, what?
Yes, but Courtney trauma dumps on Cindy's behalf about everything that she learned about her from the Shadowlands, which I do think is very much what a teenager would do. But it's very much not her place to say.
Yeah, I agree with. I understand that, but at the same time. It's not as much information as I was expecting her to dump, and that you're making it. I personally, I think it's not as much information as you're making it sound when you say that. I mean, like
that's
I agree with
true.
You, but she didn't say. I watched her. Her mother was pooling in blood, and she was blah blah, blah and she was strapped to a table or whatever.
Well,
she just
I'm
said,
glad that she had that much filter
because she could have, and she has in the past, you know. So that's sure. the only thing. But at the same time, I also think. That Courtney was kind of pushed into the position to have to say something substantial because
well, yeah,
she never
because
had this conversation
was...
before, and that's on her. Like, she should have, if she was going to bring Cindy into the group, they should have had this conversation a lot earlier, and that's on Courtney. Because if the three of them don't even know this, and they're still being expected to accept Cindy with no questions asked, that's ridiculous. Like, I do think that... Cindy did deserve to at least, you know, plead her case for why she should be on a good side, not a bad side, and everything, all that kind of stuff. And also, I feel like we still don't talk enough about how the fact that Cindy kind of coerced herself onto the team in the first place by basically threatening Yolanda into feeling bad about herself, you know, if she didn't say yes. So that's a whole other thing. That's a whole other dynamic that I'm still not okay with, and Cindy is obviously still... You know, doing the, oh, who cares about your trauma bit to her.
Yeah.
Actively doing that, right? So there is still all that going on. And that's
Well, do you
good.
Think that that's her attitude going into it? Because she doesn't want to talk about her own trauma. So by ignoring her trauma, she wants Yolanda to also ignore
She's
her trauma.
Projecting.
I think so. I think so. But the difference is that Cindy knows exactly what Yolanda's trauma is because she caused it. Yolanda doesn't know what Cindy's trauma is to that extent at all. So that I think there is some still levels of responsibility here that do require Cindy to be revealing a little bit more if she wants to be treated fairly. because she's making a huge deal over not being invited to, you know, like, lunch table discussions or this and that. And it's like, obviously she's learning, so she's struggling and she's keeping secrets. But mm-hmm. there does come a certain point that you have to give. And actually, I think that's why choosing to go to Beth is a good place to start, because she mm-hmm. will give her the chance to actually likely listen to her. Whereas Yolanda and Rick are like, sorry, we don't care. So that is smart.
But so we cut over to Cindy, who has taken the day off of school mm-hmm. and to work on herself. I think noteworthy things from this scene are that we see that in the background of, like, her board or whatever, she has a diagram of her brain, which indicates that she's afraid of, like, some kind of behavioral pattern, I guess, or maybe not behavioral, but, like, definitely something on, like, a neuroscience level where changes are happening not only to her body itself but her nervous mm-hmm. system, which is interesting. And then also we get the first clue that something is up explicitly, where she gets, like, those lizard eyes. We're just freely inviting people to the spooky eye community.
And I think
you're allowed to.
I love the spooky eye community.
Moving on, we have Mike and Jakeem in the bathroom. They're apparently always in the bathroom.
They are always in the bathroom.
And somebody has, what's the word? Somebody has scribbled over the killer as many names, and it says your mom as many names, which is the most high school thing that I've ever seen, because 100% that would happen, yes. And we get them discussing that Dragon King is back. So somebody is telling Mike all of this information, but they're not saying. We don't get any information on, like, who is telling Mike. Like, is it Pat? Is it Courtney? Is it, like, what is the situation?
Because you're right.
Because I would like to know the dynamic, because this happened in, I think, the first or second episode, too, and I was equally, I forgot to mention it, but I was like, I would like to know who's keeping Mike in the loop, because obviously he mm-hmm. is in the loop if he can tell Jakeem about it, but, like, where is he getting this information from, and what degree of information are they telling him? Because he talks about how he wants to make his JSA more serious, mm-hmm. his JSA being with Jakeem, mm-hmm. but, like...
I think, remember in episode 2... I think it's episode 2, is it? Or episode 3, whatever. But Courtney is just freely giving murder updates at breakfast.
Yeah.
So So that could be one of the ways that Mike knows what's going on, because she's literally just explaining, all right, so last night, and
perhaps,
then just like, let's recap. And then she gives her little superhero summary mm-hmm. while they're having waffles mm-hmm. or whatever. And so that could be one way. I do think, because when we had Mike's episode last season, the team were on board, even though they were like, oh, Mike, you made a mistake there at the end with the Thunderbolt. They mm-hmm. still supported mm-hmm. him. So I don't see it being the team that's holding him back. It makes way more sense to me, because it's in character, that it is, in fact, mm-hmm. Pat.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is.
Because isn't it Jakeem that says it was Pat who hid the keys?
Yes, Pat did hide the keys. Yeah. Although Mike would steal the keys to Stripe regularly
if he had
access to it. But so they mentioned that they're going to prove themselves by going into the tunnels and finding Dragon King or whatever. And they also then have that whole wish thing where they wish for the keys. I don't know how Jakeem and Mike phrased that wish for them to get.
I would like them to have a successful wish keys. At once, please.
Just one successful wish.
Successful
show
wish.
That they're competent at what they mm-hmm. do. But
at least
so,
when Jakeem, I think I mentioned it before, but it could really be that Mike is the one that's messing up the wishes, and if Jakeem just did it himself,
it might be.
It would work. No.
mm-hmm. But we cut over to Barbara, who is in my favorite outfit of the season so far.
Yeah.
Surprisingly. It's super cute. Tim is 100% absolutely on board with her proposal. I really liked that pun. That's mm-hmm. why I said it. But I don't really have notes about this whole scene other than Tim is scared out of his mind. And Paula is bringing taxidermied raccoons that she kills and stuffs herself to Barbara. this is very, this feels like a one of the, just a scene that they were like, Joy Osmansky is a series regular, so we're gonna put her in here. Like, they didn't have anything else to do with her. Same thing kind of with Crusher in the basement in the next scene, where it's like, they didn't really need to be in this episode. I don't fully understand why they were.
You know what I really, I think that what we're starting to see is that there's so much of Paula and Crusher and so little Artemis that it's a bit rough, because we're seeing how much apparently Artemis wants to join the JSA, but we're not actually seeing her want to join the JSA necessarily anymore since like the first time in episode one. So does she even know that there's a murder going on? Like, all this kind of stuff like that. Like,
I don't know. That's a good question.
If she doesn't, then I feel like a good alternative scene could have been her finding out or whatever, and her parents being no, don't go into that or whatever, and then that's it.
Well, what I think is going on, and I think that this is probably addressing an issue that a lot of people that I've been seeing, a lot of people are like, we need to not focus as much as on the adults as we do and focus only on the kids, or not only on the kids, but primarily on the kids. And I do agree that they could be showcasing the kids a little bit more than they have been. But I think the key issue is they're saying in season one, we had a lot of focus on the kids, but we also had a lot of focus on our villains. And these guys aren't villains this season, and they've already been introduced with the exception of Sylvester. So they're really mostly fleshing out Sylvester. But they're putting probably about equal time on the adults in this season as they have in season one. The issue with this season versus season one is the amount of adults. There are fewer in this season than there were in season one. And their dynamics are just not as interesting. They're fun, don't get me wrong. It's fun to get a Paula and Barbara scene. It's fun to get a Pat and Crusher scene. But it's not
interesting. Integral it's not to
something
the plot.
It's not something, yeah. It's because it's very sitcom. It stops. It stops everything in its tracks.
You're
and
right.
is like, it's like, okay, here's something that's completely unrelated.
Yeah.
Like, I love that Paula and Barbara are friends right now. Like, I do. And I don't want to make it sound like it doesn't, because I really do like those characters.
Me too.
Love how they're interacting. And I think they're fun. But it's not the time for that. They can have one or two episodes of that.
Yeah.
That are primarily that. But then, like this is getting too much.
Absolutely.
And it's fine if this is going to continue, like, minimally, but if every single episode we're going to get, like, out of our way, like, here are two scenes where the Crocs and the Whitmore Dugans are buddy buddies, it's like, I'm sorry, that's too much. I'm sorry.
It's already been
Crocs
established, and now it's getting to be, yeah. So for me the thing is, I feel like this is a kind of a critique of what they've done partially last season, but also a little bit of season one, and how quickly they got rid, they decimated the ISA children too fast. Because what I would have found extremely interesting is, instead of the Crocs always going to pester the Whitmore Dugans, it would have been so much more interesting if the Crocs became this central household for the ISA children to go to, in the same place that the Whitmore Dugans place
place
for the JSA.
Fun.
And therefore, if Isaac didn't die, if Todd came a little bit earlier and needed help, or if, you know, like, Joey didn't, that's a long shot, but, you know, if there were more ISA kids, if Henry came back for some reason, not saying that we need him, but just if we had it more balanced out in terms of ISA kids versus JSA kids becoming horrible but endearing role models to future villain kids is a way more concrete role, and it makes more sense for their characters and their histories for the Crocs to do, especially if they're just right across the street. Like, that is the thing that I think that, you know, it's such a shame that they only have Cameron, Cindy, Artemis, and Artemis is not really in it. Cameron's only just starting out, so he doesn't really have, like, any restraint, and Cindy has zero boundaries and zero, like, parental check at all. But you have two parents who really want to be parents. So mm-hmm. it's like, I feel like that's the role that they should be playing, because that's what they're good at. They were really, like, they excelled in being amazing parents to Artemis in season 2 and even in season 1, even when, like, it wasn't even that big of a deal. So that, I think, is really what the core focus should be on. And then it also, it plays into the themes of the show, because the whole show is about, you know, like, the relationship that Pat and technically Barbara, I guess, have with Courtney as she becomes a superhero, mm-hmm. and the dynamic of family and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm a little bit disappointed about mm-hmm. that. That's just something yeah. that I feel like it wouldn't feel like it's like filler or fluff or whatever in the middle of your episode.
Yeah. But anyway, cutting over to the other half of the Crocs, Crusher shows up in the basement. Pat is being pathetic with Sylvester. They're watching a movie, and Sylvester won't even let Pat quote the movie with him. It's so absurd. I don't even know. Even
like the scene. Like, it's funny, but it makes me so angry. This might have been the scene that made me go, Sylvester, you get no mercy. Absolutely. No forgiveness.
I'm done with you.
This man, Cameron, has please impale to go.
Him. Please impale him, Cameron. Thank you.
Because I feel like all the way up, even after the grocery store fight, mm-hmm. you can somewhat excuse him a little bit. But for some reason, after all of that saying, no, your character is the one that gets shot.
Draw the line.
I mean, yeah. No, but for real. But it's because of the cocky, laid-back way he's reclining on that little stupid sofa in the basement of his best friend's house, telling him he can't even say the lines for a stupid little TV show. I hate it.
It's so stupid. Anyway, Crusher comes in. And is like, hey, bud, I brought you a six-pack to feel better. And is trying to be the bigger man. And Sylvester is still trying to assert dominance on him or whatever. And the staff comes flying out. And Pat's
like,
He's like a dog, so Cameron should
go kill him because he's what he does.
Hey. What? It's what he does? It's what who does?
Cameron. Because Eclipso Cameron killed Buddy.
Oh.
And then Sylvester's like a dog, so Cameron
Okay. I did not follow your thought process whatsoever.
I'm sorry.
Well, not everybody in this house is going to die, but Sylvester, please. Yeah, anyway, they sit down and they watch the rest of their movie together. Whatever, it's fine. And then we cut over back to the school where Cameron is in the art room and Courtney is noticing that. And it's like, all right, I'm going to deal with this now. This is another scene where I was... So I saw the promo for this episode, as did most people. And I thought that it was just maybe cut weirdly. And it's not. Well, it is, but it's not. I don't know. It's just something about this scene is just so funny to me. Like, it's
we
not.
We all
like,
were convinced it was going to be a dream sequence.
I was like, there's no way that, like, this is how this is going to go down. Because it's so... First of all, it's so out of nowhere. He doesn't even, like, when Courtney touches him, he doesn't say, like, no, or, like, stop, or, like, he just, like, screams. So that, for number one, made me be like, okay, that can't be the actual sequence of events, because nobody just goes, like, ah! Like, when he, like, like, he literally rees. Like, it's like, what are we doing? But no, that's... that's what
there's
I'm
something also, wrong with that boy. Obviously there's something wrong with him, we know that parents. But there's something wrong
and his grandparents don't let him
it's
do
also
work.
Also
of course there's something wrong with him
also it's so funny the conversation that that he and Courtney have before she goes into this. She's like, Cameron, what are you doing? And he's like,
I has time for me to finally admit that my artistic talent.
No. It's stop. You gotta. It's. I'm quitting art class. Why? It's time to admit that the artistic side to me is gone. And Courtney's like, what? No, Cameron, and that's not true.
Like, it's so just, funny.
It's so funny to me. Every single bit of Camney dialogue. All right, here's my real impression of Camney. Okay, it sounds a little bit like this. Cameron, Courtney,
how are you?
it's like
obviously I've been existing here since forever, and you are only just trying to talk to me after 6 months of total silence.
It's the way that they say their names the same every single time that they start Cameron! The conversation.
It's so Courtney.
Courtney. It's so.
Also, you're here.
You're here. Oh my god.
I am.
Yeah.
Also, your camera.
So what are you doing?
And then he's like, "So do you want to like do something?" Okay, bye.
I can't. I gotta go. I gotta go.
I gotta go.
Except for the one time where she was like,
so bad.
And he was like, I can't. I gotta go. Bye.
The way he just
I'm sliding around in my office chair trying to do this. The way that this is going to be unlistenable, but I'm going to try to salvage this.
Just like, Cameron.
It's just,
Courtney.
It's just the I can't. It's very much high strung versus very calm. Unless he's not calm, in which case he goes like,
"Wah!" But I think maybe he's just been trained, you know, to be calm in the sense that it's almost
sure. Okay.
That it's almost like it sounds clinical.
It is. You're very right about that. He's dissecting that conversation.
Especially I would say in the way that he handles himself in the ice hour scene, that also was like he went off the handle, flew off the handle or whatever, and then he was like, wait, I'm not supposed to act like that, and corrected himself, right? And it was just like, because Rick caught him, he still was using that voice, but you know that boy wanted to scream out that little stupid ice no, but he couldn't have at that point.
That little stupid ice no. It's not even a no. It's just a...
They're just a stupid ice scream. Yeah. But,
anyway.
Could you imagine if that happened in the Miss Woods classroom instead? Being like, respect your teachers.
He would literally... First of all, I think he probably would have killed one of them.
Yeah.
It's a miracle. It's a miracle that Courtney just got yeeted backwards and didn't actually get impaled.
What if, like, she accidentally impaled from one of the icicles? Yeah, that could have been
They formed afterwards. He, like, it was, like, a burst of, like, wind or whatever, and then they started forming. I don't know. I don't know exactly how the physics of that worked, because he seemed like he was trying to calm himself down, and that was not working. I don't know. I guess it's noteworthy to say that he did get a little blue, his hair froze like very slightly. I hope that they do a little bit more with that effect, because I don't want him to be a Smurf.
It looked a little bit like the top of his hair was starting to also turn
that's what I was saying. It was like very silver tips things.
I don't need a Killer Frost whole wig situation, but like a little bit of a
one
dye
strand.
Tip situation
is fun. What I think probably if they're going to have him do that again is they didn't want to waste like the CGI on like this 2 second clip. So they probably were like, we're not going to bother to put the dots on you or whatever. Like that's too much. So we'll just like color correct you. And they did do his eyes again, but they were white. Completely. I'm pretty sure it was either his eyes were closed and it's like at a weird angle so you can't see, or they're like not fully open but they're like whited over or whatever.
I like though about the whole visuals of the fact that he had the wind going on, you have the icicles coming from the ceiling and from the floor, but it's also snowing still, so it's like there's a lot. It's almost a little bit like he's a full-on, like, snow weather type situation kind of person rather than necessarily just... I don't know what I'm saying. It's late. But what I mean is, I'm surprised. I'm a little bit surprised by all of the snow. That's what I'm because well, we didn't get that with Jordan. Like we got no snow. What do you mean? Yes, what do you mean?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, like the frost. But that's to me. Did it? Was there actual frost at the end? Like with the garden? I don't remember that. I remember it just being the frost garden, over grass.
The garden's not a perfect parallel because, like, it was outside.
When
so
did we?
I
when did Jordan
was,
have snow?
I think it snowed during episode 3 with Joey, didn't it? Yeah. It was, no, it was definitely snowing
it was
when
ice.
When you have Cameron up to the gate, it's snowing.
Okay, maybe, but I don't remember it being such a huge focus for Jordan of it being specifically snow, and for Cameron, the snow part really is.
Well, I think they're doing a motif with that because you had the snow globes in the beginning and the snow at the end. I think that it's probably.
But all I'm
like,
saying is that it's the fact that it's all happening all at once, like all
sure.
of it is a lot, and I like the effect of the snow and the icicles happening all at once. It's not just like one icicle blasting out of your hand. Mm-hmm. It's literally I'm growing all these icicles out of the ceiling and out of the floor. Like that's a lot for your first serious
yes.
explosion.
Yes. I mean, I'm assuming that there's we don't have a lot of background on what he's doing to like deal with this. Oh, we forgot to mention that his grandparents said in that earlier scene that he was supposed to be trying again for something, but like I don't know what they were having him try for. So I don't exactly know what they're doing at home.
Yeah, not
but
sure.
My
that's true.
Best my
also yeah
what
the
I would
his hair
have
was all frozen
to
too was fun. But yeah.
What I would have to feel like maybe is he's like not letting it out like he should be, which is why he's getting these episodes.
Yeah,
like the
yeah.
only time that he's had
he's
it as an actual
feeling it
yes
he's
the only time
it.
That he's
yeah.
actually done it on purpose was to poke Rick's tire and to make it snow at the end of the episode. Every other time it's not been on purpose, so I think he's very much like holding it in, which is why it was such a big explosion because he's been I don't know
well whatever but
sense
yeah
of it. It's
the other thing that I'm a bit surprised about is that Courtney doesn't seem too cold. She's wearing a very very non
shivers a little bit
she went,
but
she
yeah
went, but it's not I feel like it's not enough. I don't know, I feel like the whole oh I'm gonna hurt you is important, but also the aren't you freezing, aren't you cold,
oh, yeah.
let me like I don't know, I feel like that's.
Well, we also have to talk about the whole after thing, because Courtney does not handle this in
all the whole
any
lying,
way.
Everything.
She, this is already a disaster because he explodes, and you know that he's immediately like, okay, there are two ways where this could go. I could either be honest with her about this, or like I could lie. And he chooses not to lie. He's like, I'm going to be honest about this, but he's. More importantly, like, why are you not freaked out of your mind right now? Like,
which
he doesn't understand.
More.
Which is
yeah.
honestly correct. Because if. Because, like, Courtney, girl, you have to act a little bit shocked. There's no shock.
Yeah.
There's no shock other than, oh, this is a little bit more than I expected ever.
She just goes, oh, let me go and get you a chair.
Yeah,
no,
she
but...
pulls, she pulls him up a chair. As
yeah.
if
he should be helping her
not
up,
get
not her helping
across
him up.
The room.
Like,
I know.
This?
I thought that was weird that he wasn't like.
Yeah.
You should be sitting down.
Yeah, but can I just say what we were like? We talked about what we thought would be a better alternative to what she did if she wanted to actually
yes.
like save face.
Yeah.
So it was like we were saying what's so weird. Obviously, is her clear shock at it happening, mm-hmm. but then. Getting over it and being like, how can I help and support you, my lovely snowy almost boyfriend? And instead, she should have ran out. Okay, like just,
yes.
you know, she should have ran out. You see Cameron kind of freaking out alone in the art room. And then you see her come back in. And she, like, you give her the time to freak out outside in the hallway going, oh, he has the blah, 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 what do I do, blah, blah, blah. And then she goes, okay, I got it. And you see her walk back in and she's kind of assessing the situation. And then she says, I'm sorry for running away. You turned into an ice monster and I got really freaked out. Right? Which is absolutely
which is correct.
One, genuine, correct, honest, true. So then he'd be like, Courtney, I'm an ice monster. So
well, no, he would,
right?
No,
I know, but I mean, he'd be like, I'm so sorry that happened. This, I know this is crazy. And then you continue on from there. But then you can have her saying, like, he's like, well, I don't know, like, what's going on. She's like, I don't know how I'm feeling, like, all that kind of stuff. The dialogue then makes sense.
Yeah, she's also pulling. I love the absolute lack of game that's on Courtney's face. And I feel like, how is Cameron that stupid? Because she's literally, he's like, yeah, my dad was murdered.
Okay.
And she's like, oh, oh. Well, you can't see my face because this is a podcast. Like, but she's not doing a good job of covering her tracks.
I think that's
really fun because Breck is a good actress and Courtney is not, and I think that's a really fun touch that they have in this show.
But just to remember the fact that in season one we had a similar type of reveal where Rick found out his parents were murdered and Beth was so overwhelmed she literally like almost fell on the floor herself because she was so upset. Like, she was crying, she was like overwhelmed and all that. So that's a genuine reaction to someone that you've known for a long time, and they haven't known each other for a long time, but they're closer already than like Rick and Beth were at that moment. And a classmate of yours says, oh, like, my parents or one of my parents got murdered,
right?
Being like, oh, are you okay? Like, I can't believe that's so scary. Like, you know, all that kind of stuff. Totally appropriate. And Beth did that there in season one. So the fact that she's literally just going like, So yikes.
It is very yikes. I'm trying to think if there's anything else just to wrap up my thoughts on that scene. It's interesting.
Yes, there's two things.
The level of Cameron knowing, I think, is very important. That his grandparents fully know what happened, and they want him to find that out, presumably from Courtney. They want him to connect those dots, presumably on his own, and to make... They want him to make the connections, and they want him to be hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, they're doing this... It's very smart.
They're trying to trigger his villain era.
They want this to happen on purpose. Now, granted, he still, if he finds out and he knows that they know who killed his father, he should be mad at them too for not telling him and for letting him go after this girl that was involved in his father's death. Like, there's definitely, he's not gonna be happy with
them
either.
It's a power play situation because they also know that they're all he has and he's still a child, and they're the ones who have the money and the resources and all of the power. It's a rough situation to be in. The other thing I was specifically wanted to point out was the fact that they really have told him that his dad was a superhero. So not just, oh, he had weird powers, it's a thing in our family, which is something that you could technically pass off because that's a thing in media. Like, you can totally have, oh, we have this weird thing, it's just a genetic thing in our family, you just have to live with it. But no, they really went, oh yeah, and he was a hero. And so, you know, that is the part that is a direct parallel now, because now Cameron is, like, unfortunately very, very misinformed about who his father is. He thinks his dad is the hero. And in season one, Courtney thought her dad was the hero, and he wasn't as well. So, like, you have that Cammy parallel here, which is quite interesting that Cameron's in the exact same shoes as Courtney was in season one, but the stakes, I would argue, are a lot higher.
Moving on from that scene that we probably spent way too long speaking about.
Yeah, we did.
I
have nothing to say about the suit scene, so
There's
a suit scene?
Pat giving.
Oh, Sylvester yeah. No, I don't have anything to say about that either.
Except for Pat, I don't Pat, think he deserves
bad
that
idea,
suit.
Pat. No.
Like, what?
He's literally about to be like, I'm done being Starman. And Pat is like, actually, what if you weren't?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, Patrick.
Moving on.
Okay, Patrick.
So, interesting thing that I noticed this time. Pat and Sylvester acknowledged that Sylvester wanted to kill all of those villains. He wanted to kill the Shade. He wanted to kill the Crocs. He wanted to kill the Gambler, theoretically. I think they mentioned that. And it's like, in episode 1 or 2, I think it was 2, he's like, I feel bad for somebody for killing somebody. So clearly he doesn't, and that's a lie, because he's very casually being like, yeah, you're right. I would have killed these people. So it's like... Oh,
whatever. So why are we giving him a suit?
But I don't hate the idea of him. See, I think that he is going to be more interesting in his interactions with the JSA
kids.
And
yeah.
Corrupting the JSA.
Yes. I love
like
him
ruining.
As a chaos agent. I think that's a
I
lot
really,
of fun.
I really like him as, I guess, would anti-villain be the correct word for him? He's not a villain at this mm-hmm. point, but he's not. He's not a hero. He's not even an anti-hero. So I think he's an anti-villain, I guess.
I like the word chaos agent, but yeah.
He's instigating things. He doesn't mean to necessarily... I mean, he does mean to instigate, but he doesn't mean to make things bad for people and his family and friends.
He's not
family,
trying to
like
hurt
people
on purpose.
He's yeah.
Unless,
so,
unless they're ISA kids, in which case he really did try to hurt Cindy mm-hmm. when he said
yes.
the stuff to her.
Yes. So it's the sort of thing where it's like, I like this aspect of his character. I don't care about him passing the mantle to Courtney. I don't really care about him sharing it with Courtney unless it's going to cause drama between Courtney and, I don't know, anybody else. I don't really care about his relationship with Pat that much. I care about it a little bit, but not really that much.
We care about it on Pat's side, not on actually
yes.
Sylvester's side.
Yes. So I think it's fun for him to actually be a little unhinged. I mean, more than I liked him. I didn't like him, but I liked what they were doing with his character in the grocery fight scene.
Oh,
like,
that was a lot
like,
of fun.
I don't like Sylvester, but I can admit that it was badass.
Oh, yeah,
what he was doing.
Incredible.
So
I think it's in the fighting sequences that we're gonna have a lot more fun and seeing
yes.
how
and seeing how unhinged he is in the promo.
Oh,
where he's like shooting the what?
ISA for I said it's going to be insane or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, the ISA portrait.
So I'm not mad about that plot point, but it feels like it took a long time to get there.
Yeah,
like
it definitely
from,
did.
From the initial trailer.
However,
it looks like he's going to get involved significantly earlier than
he did. I feel like we
but...
also really need to remember how many episodes it took us to actually get Eclipso's reveal in season
That's
2 as well.
True.
We are literally on the same pace. It's just that
That's true.
We're so what's the word? I think when we were watching season 2, we had no idea what Eclipso was about to do.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the way that unfortunately how all of the episode descriptions kind of got leaked or dropped or
it
however
wasn't
you want to
yeah.
It wasn't leaked, but just no, but even the names, you know, like from early on and all that kind of stuff, just having so many random like pieces of information that kind of explain to us like about the villains mm-hmm. and the plot and all that different kind of stuff from the very first episode, it's making the wait very hard to get to like episodes 5, 6, 7, 8 mm-hmm. which we know are going to be like
yes.
banger episodes,
and it's even harder that they put the break here.
Yeah.
Because we know that episode 5 and episode 6 are going to be, like, balls to the wall. But we had to sit through an extra week of waiting. And it's like, episode 4 was not...
It didn't...
So strong.
It wasn't
that it's
strong
like, I'm
compared
satisfied.
To episode 3.
Like,
episode 3 was
that's
10
the good
on 10.
Cush, but
and then you get episode 4 and, like, that's like...
It's okay.
It's
it
not
bad.
Bad. Like, Charles McNider being there really honestly saved
Charles
the episode
was good.
For me.
We brought the
Cameron
plot
finally,
forward.
Yeah. Realizing.
He's doing something.
Yeah, I like that.
Thank
yeah.
God. First made baby's first plot point.
Yeah.
I'm actually glad that we got real scenes and we actually got to see more of him. Because I feel like we've been teased for so long and they never really followed through until now.
I think what they're doing in 3, 4, 5, 6 is they're basically going to overcompensate for the first two seasons. So I think there's going to be a lot of Cameron by nature of that. But that's fine because there's basically nothing to go off of. And the first two seasons, he had like 30 minutes of screen time or whatever. So if he gets another 30 minutes in this, like up through episode 6, like I'm not going to be mad about it. Like I'm never going to complain about that and be like, I feel like there's too much Cameron. Like, you know what I mean?
Because there hasn't ever been Cameron. I understand people might be surprised. I think some people are surprised.
I think some people are, in fact, like, I don't care about this character. And it's like, that's fine, but...
But also, like, they need to realize that the reason why they don't care is because they don't know him.
Yeah. Right.
And like, now we're finally learning about him, so...
He can be interesting.
He is such an interesting character.
Oh, I know.
The casual viewers don't.
I think, again,
they just don't get him.
The highlight of the fact is that, like, the concept of Cameron is like truly highlighting what we really enjoy about the show, which is, like, a teenager going through something like this.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what we've been craving all season.
Yes.
You know, and we're getting a lot of Crusher, and we're getting a lot of Paula, and we're getting a lot of Sylvester, and we're getting quite a bit of Pat, and we like them.
Yeah.
But that's not why we're sitting down every week waiting for something to happen. We're waiting for something to happen specifically for the kids. Yeah. So that's why we're like, yes, finally Cameron's giving us something.
But so there's like a brief scene of Courtney and I was going to call him Hunter.
How Cameron. Are they walking to his house? Aren't they not like... Does not Cameron live far away? Like, did they really walk all the way from...
He walks home from school. So he can't be that far away. But yeah, so we get that little brief thing. And then we cut back over to Rick and Yolanda, who are looking for Courtney. She's not answering her phone. She has finally been cured of her can't stop looking at my phone disease. No matter how many emojis Yolanda is putting in that text, she is not... She's ignoring those lizards. She's ignoring the snake emojis. She's ignoring star and cat and hourglass and moon. She's ignoring all of that because she is preoccupied. So good for her, I guess, that she's finally figured that out.
What I find interesting is, I don't know if you're there yet, but when Rick and Yolanda, and when Rick specifically says, Beth and Dr. McKnider found out that Dragon King is the one who attacked you. That's not actually... That's
not
Rick.
What they said.
That is Rick extrapolating from what Beth probably told him.
It's also super interesting that they're not including Beth in this.
I know. So interesting. And I don't know, like, where did she go, first of all? Like, is it that she was busy with... Maybe she was having a lovely dinner with Charles, with her parents or something. But maybe, and I think more likely, it's that Rick was like, all right, we got someone, let's go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could be several things. It could be Rick doesn't want to involve Beth because he doesn't want her to get hurt by Dragon King or whatever. And he's just like, let's just go. I'll deal with it myself. Mm-hmm. Number two, it could be because he knows that if he tells Beth, oh, yeah, let's go get him, Beth will be like, no, let's at least think about it and come up with a plan. And Rick doesn't want to come up with a plan. He never does. Yep. So he's just not. He's like, well, why would I tell her and have her make me wait? Instead, I could just not tell her and then we can go right away. Right. So I think that's my number one answer when it comes to that. And then, or it could just be specifically that she said, oh, wait for me. Let me figure something out. And when Courtney comes back, we'll do something together. And then Rick and Yolanda were like, it's Cindy. Oh, yeah. Let's get on our suits. Let's go to her. Like, let's basically attack everything. Because specifically, Cindy is Yolanda's trigger word. Mm-hmm. And Rick is always her hype man when it comes to hating on someone who doesn't really deserve hate. So... Yeah. Yeah.
And then we get Camney in the garden, and it's like very funny how they blocked it, because they go to the direct center of that, like, gazebo. It's not a gazebo, but, like, whatever, like, whatever you would call that.
It's a gazebo. Thing. It just doesn't... It is.
It's just, it's very funny to me how exact they are with being in the center. Like, mm-hmm. you know that they were like...
Yeah.
They were like, we need to get that shot. But, I don't know. Courtney's still being ridiculous and is like, what? I don't know. I don't understand anything. You're not going to read. And she convinces Cameron to express himself through ice and snow or whatever. Which is fine.
Well, couldn't he just have, like, tried to do some sort of awkward painting motion? Because it's like, oh, art. Okay. So he's like, and then, like, and then you have, like, wind swirling and then something like that. It would have looked silly, but less silly than
that. Yeah, I feel like if he, like, did something with his hand. Yeah. Like, if he moved his hands up in the air. If he just
went like this or
whatever. Yeah. But he opens his hand and, like, pumps out his chest. And it's, like, I mean, I guess, like, if, like, that's what he did before with the ice explosion. So if he's thinking and reflecting and it's like, this is what I did last time. Let me do it this time. But thinking... positively.
It's whatever. Also funny because it's also funny because Courtney says, think about all the love that your mom and dad have for you. He's like,
yeah,
this much.
I will say that is kind of how his powers worked, at least yeah. like in the first two seasons, in the minimal uses that we've had of him. In the first season, obviously he's thinking of his mom when he blows out the candle and he gets a little breath. And he's thinking in the second season of his father when he's painting the mural, obviously, and he drops whatever. Like, so that's kind of always how his powers have worked. So I think that it's like a, not really like a callback, but it's kind of explicitly like, look at what you can do when you're thinking, I don't know. I feel yeah. like there's some purpose there.
No, I definitely think so too. It's quite deliberate. They can do it anywhere, and they did it there. He should have told Courtney to at least step back a little bit.
I don't understand why he doesn't tell her to do that, because they were just holding hands, and he's like, I'm going to hurt you.
He's like,
meanwhile, he's like, let me just shoot ice out of my hand.
The music's beautiful.
The music is beautiful. The cinematography of the kiss is very nice. I don't like the dialogue that they have going into it. It makes me cringe. I'm sorry. It's very 16 years old though.
But so, I mean, it works.
I really do like the dialogue.
They're 16.
I think
okay, I like so we it. Have, I like it too,
okay, so I'm in the minority here.
Yeah, no,
I like that it's magic. Yeah,
I really didn't expect to like the dialogue because I don't like the ship itself. So I really thought that I would be rolling my eyes at the entire thing. But I did like the dialogue, and I did like the scene itself. I think it's cute.
With the whole dialogue thing, the reason why I like it is because, to me, it's in character for Cameron to say something so, like, as cheesy as, oh, it's magical, like you. Totally, like, just slide right into it and just, like, secure that girlfriend with that one line. Like, that's it.
Girlfriend secured.
Girlfriend secured.
There's like the Xbox achievement.
Yeah. He's like, there's no phone here. I gotta shoot my shot. This is the only time I got her distracted enough that she's not thinking about her cell phone.
We cut over to Cindy to finish out the episode, and we have that huge reveal that she's turning into a lizard.
I loved her blouse though. She's a were-lizard.
Dragon. I really do want to point out that there was an interview. I know that I said this to Adipa and Tam earlier, but there was an interview with, I think, like, Comic Book Review where Meg DeLacy was like, she's cold-blooded now. And that is, I've been thinking about ectotherm Cindy Berman for probably 48 hours straight. Because what do you mean she's cold-blooded? I just said, the only crazy word I used was ectotherm, which is a synonym for cold-blooded.
Oh.
It's cold-blooded.
Thank you.
I think that she said that because, like, you know how, like, Meg really tries to get into her character's mind when she's acting. Like, she did the whole thing with practicing with the knives and everything and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I think she's saying that from her point of view as being an actress and trying to imagine what she might be feeling like and not necessarily going on to say that Cindy being cold-blooded and everything. It's like, and the effects of that are going to actually play into the episodes. I don't know. I could be wrong. I could be wrong, because maybe that's why Beth would need to help her out, because she's like, help, I'm getting all these side effects, but...
I mean, the implication of that would be that if Cameron makes it super cold, that she would, like, not die instantly, but she would have to get out of there pretty quickly, because her metabolism would stop working. Like, she's... I don't know how she's going to survive the winter. I'm a little concerned about that aspect of it. But Dragon King survived, managed.
So fine. She's still human. She's just not fully human.
Sure. I mean, she never was. Well, yeah. I mean, she...
never was. I mean, actually, she was born regular. Wait a minute. Oh, I don't want to think about that, but you're right.
But when she was a baby, they started the experiments, presumably, so...
Yeah, but she was born from Dragon King, post Dragon King a nation. So,
no, that's not technically... that's not how genetics work. That's not how genetics work. It's not Lamarck. It's not Lamarck. I mean, you could get into a whole like epigenetics thing, but I don't. It's no, not. Let's stop. That's not. It's just she. Okay. Her father's gametes are going to be the same gametes that he has been producing since day one.
Okay.
And that's how I'm going to leave that phrasing. And it's very clinical because I'm not saying.
No, you don't have to.
Oh, wait. I did want to say, though, that Adiba totally got it right. Like, she called it in episode 2, and I don't remember if I cut it out or not, and I hope that I didn't cut it out. I definitely cut out the part.
Yeah, but the long sleeve thing, yeah.
Adiba was like, Cindy has only been wearing long sleeves, and I think...
I was right.
Adiba then debunked herself and said that she was only wearing long sleeves in season 2, so I might have cut the whole thing out. But let the record show that... Like 3 weeks ago, Adiba was like, I think she's turning into a lizard. And Tam and I were like, elaborate. And she said, because she only.
But she was right.
She totally was right. But anyway, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Squadcast. I'm Cameron. You can follow me on Twitter at Ice Hour Night or on Tumblr at Blue Valley Breaking News.
I'm Adiba, and you can find me on every platform as Great Starlight.
I'm Tam, and you can follow me on Twitter at TKVAuronights with an S, or Auronights on Tumblr, or That Killer Vibe on Instagram.
All right, and we will be back next week for episode 5. We're sorry for taking a break, but this episode, I'm pretty sure, is going to be significantly longer than the past season 3 episodes have been. So, yeah, stay tuned for our discussion of The Thief. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.